This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, the power of WordPress. But first, the College Board reports the average cost of tuition and fees in the 2015-2016 school year topped $9,400 for state residents at public colleges. It was $23,893 for out-of-state residents attending public schools and $32,405 for students going to a private university. Add on books, room and board, and the cost of transportation if you live on campus, and the price of higher education can leave you with a case of sticker shock. So other than student loans or hoping your child lands a scholarship, how can you pay for college? Well, joining us with a look at the various plans for saving and investing for college are certified financial planner Luke Hale with Foster and Motley and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Luke and Chris, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always
good to see your smiling face, Chris. There were a lot of economic numbers today. This was actually a pretty big day for numbers.
I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 separate economic indicators released this morning between 7:30, actually between 8:30 and 10 o'clock. Other than that, there's nothing going on. most of them, now, as we speak, by the way, the Dow Jones Industrials, here it is. It's September 15th. It's the middle of September. We've had a very volatile week. I mean, the longest consecutive streak of less than 1% moves, either up or down, that the markets had. It was 44 straight days of nothing until last Friday when we were down 390. Then we got a lot of that back on Monday. Then gave them a lot back on Tuesday. Yesterday was a meh. But today we're up about 120 points. The Philadelphia Fed was the big one. That was the big happy surprise. It was expected that that number would be up just 1%, the Philly Fed survey. It was up nearly 13, at a reading of 13.
Okay, so, what is that particular, what's that measuring?
Well, the various Federal Reserve banks have different gauges of activity. The Richmond Fed has one. Probably the two most widely known are the Philly Fed and the New York Fed, which the so-called Empire State Index, and that was also released today. So they just measure economic activity in that region. And so the Philly Fed, and they were, again, both released today. The New York Fed, the Empire Manufacturing Survey was down about 2%. It was expected to be down 1, probably at a reading of minus 1. So they assign a score to it, and so it's not a percentage. So it's just at a level of. And in the case of the Philly Fed survey, that was a big surprise. And so between that, oil prices firming up, And technology issues are very strong today. There's a certain company that makes a certain kind of cell phone whose name we shouldn't mention to avoid making an investment recommendation. But the seventh iteration of this particular company's smartphone, which will go on sale tomorrow, is reported to be sold out, at least the first run of manufacturing. So there seems to be some more demand than supply. And shares of this particular company, which is it's Apple, of course. But shares of Apple are up. But again,
as if we couldn't tell.
Yeah, just trying to gently hint. But Apple's up about $3 again today. So Apple was one of the few companies that went up on Tuesday. It had a good day yesterday. CNBC's all over it today saying this is it's been very volatile. It was down a lot the prior week. And again, it points to the need to diversify. And diversification actually is what you get when you should do when you save for college. Because when you're setting money aside for college, you have a finite time that the money's going to be growing. And then unless you have a perpetual student, and there are a few of those, but most, if you get out in 4 or 5 years, that money's going, the balance in that fund is going to be liquidated mostly over the course of 4 or 5 years.
So I take it, Chris, that hoping that my child gets a scholarship or that I win the lottery is not a good saving strategy for college education.
Well, there's such a thing as a hope scholarship, but hope is not a plan.
Not that kind of hope,
in the investment world. Hope is not a plan.
Luke, as a financial planner, do you find this is an area that a lot of people struggle with, this idea of saving for college and the not realizing the impact it can have if you have to take on a lot of student loan debt because you didn't save ahead of time?
I think it's a big surprise for most people. I think people walk around in their head thinking about what college used to cost when they went to college. And college costs have grown by about 6% a year. And if you do the math on that, I actually was looking at my college cost. I graduated from the University of Kentucky in 1993. It took me about $25,000 to get through UK at that time. Now it would take about $100,000 to do the same thing. And people are stunned when they see that number because it is totally unexpected. And because it's unexpected, it's often not planned for. And people end up dealing with their lack of planning through student loans. And that was a conversation we were having before we were on the air. And it's actually something that's affecting our society. I think people are living at home longer after they graduate because they accumulated loans that they didn't plan for. I think they're delaying marriage. I think they're delaying starting their families. So there are a lot of positive attributes to getting started early and saving as hard as you can and being aware that these costs are out there. Hoping and putting your head in the sand is not a great strategy for success in this area.
Well, you know, it's interesting you're talking about all the things that people will delay in life, marriage, kids, starting a family, a career, whatever. But it for those of us who are parents, older parents, one of the impacts I've seen is if you're a parent who has a lot of the Parent Plus loans, a lot of the parents of the student loan debt yourself, it starts to change the way you think about retirement. Because you look at it and go, I'll be paying this into retirement, or maybe I just can't retire as soon as I thought.
That's right. I think it's delaying retirements, too, for the parents that have taken those loans. And we always say that you can't borrow your way into retirement. You have to have enough money available to you to support you and your family through your retirement years, or you continue to keep working. Those are kind of the choices that you make. But having a lot of debt going into retirement is not a good strategy. So it's definitely changing that end of the demographic as well as the students' end of the demographic.
419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Chris, would you say that this, in terms of where planning for college fits into the financial planning hierarchy, that this is as big an issue as, say, planning for retirement?
Well, It can be. It depends on how many kids you have. It depends on the kind of school you want them to go to. It depends on how your family dynamics. In other words, if grandparents, and we see this a lot in our practice, where grandparents treasure a college education for their grandchildren so much that becomes their overriding goal, is to fund these college saving plans of some sort. And there are certain types of savings plans that can do double duty. They can work as an estate planning tool. They can work as a way to reduce taxes by keeping interest and dividends and capital gains off of a well-off grandparents or well-off parents' tax return. And because it happens sooner, though, sometimes it competes with retirement. And that's why, you know, it's really great, and I'm very happy, always happy when Luke Hale from Foster and Motley comes to visit as a certified financial planner. You probably see this a lot in your work, Luke, where people may have set aside a lot of money for retirement to the detriment of the college plan, or overfunded college to the detriment of retirement. So it's really important to have a sense of you have to juggle both these things. So you don't have to be like the guys, like the people on the Ed Sullivan Show with the plates on the end of the stick and the rings around your arms, you know, juggling all these things at the same time. But you should take a coordinated, comprehensive look at all the different inputs. You know, in the world of financial planning, facts are good things. They're stubborn things, as John Adams said, but they're the best things you have. And it's easy to get facts. You can say, well, the average cost of a public school, this is according to the College Board, the average cost of a public college around this great land of ours is $20,846 a year. It's expected to go up to almost $34,000 a year by 2031. But private school, $45,000 a year, expected to rise to over $75,000 in the next 15 years. So those are facts. Those are cold, hard facts. But in the absence of facts, then you can make estimates, and you can have good estimates and you can work with them, or you can then move on to the third category of input, which is just guesswork. And something as important as your retirement and your children's education or grandchildren's education shouldn't be left to guesswork. It should be as fact-based as possible. And so these two competing, you know, there's two things tugging for your assets' attention. Retirement and college, well, sometimes clash, and you have to keep them in check. You have to keep them balanced.
I think another complexity is a lot of times you don't know which college you're going to choose until you actually choose it. So the best you can do is make educated estimates, hopefully a little better than a guesstimate, but sometimes not as much. But you have to plan and you have to save. But you may need to be aware that the choices you make at the end, which college you actually go to, are very meaningful.
Yeah, and you don't have to do this on your own. There are a lot of people in the financial services industry who have tremendous resources who can help you. Also, believe it or not, if you go to the Internal Revenue Service's website, and there's a handy-dandy, it's a rather, I'm going to say this is about 3/4 of an inch thick. I printed it out. It's IRS Publication 970. It's updated annually. So this is for the 2015 returns. But it is step-by-step. Everything you need to know about the American Opportunity Credit, the Lifetime Learning Credit, student loan interest deduction, tuition and fees deduction, what a Coverdale savings account is. We're going to cover all this in the next 18 minutes, of course. The qualified tuition program, education exception, and additional tax on early IRA distributions. You got it. But it's IRS.
The point is that people need to be aware that that's out there to help defray the costs of college
exactly.
education.
Exactly. But it's
because as I understand, a lot of people miss these.
Sure. It's publication 970, and it's not just the kind of thing you should just Google and then say, okay, I did my homework. You should really kind of, you know, before it's crunch time, before you're filling out the dreaded – I can't say the FAFSA. We can't say FAFSA without the word dreaded in front of it.
Right.
Before you fill out that form, it's a good idea to have a sense of what this is. It really is. So, you know, you don't have to read it all at once, nor do you have to become an expert, but it's nice to know all the different – ways that you can get help.
So to Luke's point earlier, how soon should you start this whole process?
I don't think you can start saving soon enough. Yes. You just have to assume that it is your goal to send your child or for your child to be able to afford to go to college or as early as you can and then start doing what you can. You don't have to do the whole thing all at once. Chances are your income's going to rise over your working career and you'll be able to do more later. But I think the important part is establishing a routine of savings.
Yeah, and probably the most popular way to do that is the so-called Section 529 plan. That's the section of the Internal Revenue Code that was created and written into law roughly 20 years ago. The IRS calls them generically QTPs, not to be confused with a Q-tip trust, but a QTP is a qualified tuition program. There are significant tax advantages on the accumulation side. You don't get a federal deduction for these, but most every state has their own plan, in which cases the money grows tax-free, and as long as it's used for college. And some states, Ohio, for example, gives you a tax break if you participate in the Ohio plan. Indiana gives you an even more generous tax break if you participate in their plan. But every state plan has its own unique characteristics. They have different portfolio managers. They have different tax treatments. They have different total amounts you can contribute per child and grandchild. In the state of Ohio, for example, it's $426,000 that you can have pile up in one of these things.
And different expenses, too. Some states are a lot more expensive than others to have a plan. And generally speaking, you should choose something with a low cost.
Yeah. And most of these plans, interestingly, just because it says Ohio or Indiana or whatever state doesn't mean that the money has to be spent in that state.
So you've got a lot of flexibility. Hang on to this thought, Chris. We'll take a break here and continue our conversation after this. You can join us at 513-419-7100. Thanks to Rebecca Swartzen-Druber for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Joining us with a look at the various plans for saving and investing for college are certified financial planner Luke Hale with Foster & Motley and Chris DeSimeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So where do you start on a with a 529 plan? How, what's the starting point, Chris? Are they pretty much available?
As soon as Junior gets a Social Security number.
Okay.
As soon as your that little bundle of joy has a Social Security number.
But you do this through the state that you live in, or?
You can do it directly through the state tuition authority, and you would just Google 529 Indiana or 529 Ohio, and it'll take you right there. There's another website called Saving for College. It's Joe Hurley, who made a career out of this. He's written several books. So you start at the various states that you want to investigate, and then you evaluate the funds, and you make a determination. Should you invest in your own state's fund and get some kind of tax benefit, whether it's a deduction or a credit? And every state's a little different. What kind of performance do you have in the funds? What are the fees and expenses? And these are all things that are very knowable. But you start with that, and then just keep filling it. You can also, if you get a little distressed with your first choice, you're allowed to change it once a year. You can move from one fund manager to another, one state to another.
No, how do you know what's appropriate though? I mean, is it based on time? I take it.
That's right.
My favorite website is the one that you mentioned. It's savingforcollege.com. And this website allows you to compare different states' 529. So you can look at the income tax benefits. You can look at the performance. You can look at the fees. So if you're an Indiana resident, you can judge if the tax benefit that you receive by being an Indiana resident warrants you making that choice in Indiana. Is that a smart choice, or should you choose Washington, D.C.'s plan, which may be altogether different and may be better? So that tool allows you to sort through your choices effectively, I think.
Yeah, and they, instead of assigning a star rating to funds, they have a cap.
Like a graduation cap.
A graduation cap. Exactly. Yeah.
So I take it, if you're talking about starting somebody who's 1 year old, you can take a little more risks in that particular investment. If you're talking about you're starting to save for somebody who's 14 years old, then you probably want to be a little bit more cautious.
That's right. And Mark, many of these 529 plans have what's called an age-based allocation. So you say, I want a plan that's going to be ready to be spent down in 18 years. That plan's going to have a lot more stocks in it than bonds and cash. And as your child or grandchild or whoever the beneficiary is gets closer to spending that money, the portfolio itself automatically shifts in such a way as to reduce volatility, because what you would hate to see happen is to have the college savings account get chopped in half by a capricious and mischievous market right as school is getting ready to start.
Does a 529 affect your eligibility for financial aid?
It can. It can. On the parent's return, under the FAFSA forms, they have different computations. So if a 529 is in the parent's column, it can affect the student's eligibility for aid. But that's not a reason not to do these things. You've got to save as much as you can. I think financial aid eligibility is often overrated. I did a little research. It looks like that most people won't be eligible for federal financial aid if they make over about $50,000 a year as a household. So many families with two working parents will exceed that. You may need the money, but the federal government may not determine that you are eligible for a need-based scholarship.
And Chris, what if I do a really, really, really good job and I end up with money left over in my 529? Can I use that for anything else?
Then the fine folks at the Cincinnati Public Radio Pledge Drive will be calling you. No, actually, what you can do with that, you can take it out and pay a penalty. Or let's say that you're the parent and you have that money for your oldest, and then the oldest child graduates and doesn't consume it all. The holder of that account can then move that account over to kid number two, kid number three, kid number four, or use it themselves, or just let it sit there. And maybe the student wants to go back to grad school after a couple of years. So it doesn't just blow up and become the student's money. until the person who funded that account decides to spend it. That's the beauty of a 529, or one advantage of a 529 plan over the old-fashioned custodial plans, because they remain in the control of the person who funded it and do not automatically convert to being owned by a recent college graduate, which might not be a 22-year-old pocketbook is perhaps not the best place for a large wad of money.
513-419-7100 to join us. Let's talk with Kimberly. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thank you.
Hey, so I just wanted to make some comments about some of the free money that's available, which is always a good thing for parents. I'm right there. My son just started at University of Kentucky, first year, and I've got another one coming up down the pike. So what we found, and I'm going to share this for parents who might have a student who, they need to find that free money. I would take my ninth grader, had to do over again, and take him to, as an example, the University of Alabama Huntsville website. And they have a table on there that shows you if you have this ACT score and this GPA, you can get this percentage of your tuition, room, and board paid for. And what that does is it helps to link for the kid in their mind how their achievement equates to money.
So it becomes
real
an incentive.
Money. Yes. And then the second thing is I paid for one of the more expensive boot camps in the Cincinnati area for the ACT prep testing. And my son's score jumped 3 points because of that. So that $400 investment ended up putting him in a bracket where he got many more tens of thousands of dollars in scholarships. So it was well worth it. So just another way of looking at how, we can incentivize kids doing better in school.
Yeah, Kimberly, thank you for the call.
Yeah, good points. Good points. Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm. Again, 513-419-7100. Now, there's also the Coverdell Education Savings Account that people can use. What's the difference between this and the 529 plan?
Coverdell has a very low ability or an amount that you can contribute every year. The contribution amount.
So you can't put as much in as you can at 529.
You can put a lot in a 529 plan, but with a Coverdell, you're limited to $2,000 per year per student.
Yeah, the difference is that with most 529 plans, the investment choices are some kind of fixed account or a series of mutual funds. With a Coverdell, you can do that, but you can also choose individual securities. It's very much like your own individual IRA. And another key difference is that where a 529 can only be used for post-secondary education, room, board, and the things associated with college, a Coverdell plan can actually be used to pay for elementary school, private elementary school, private high school, and so forth. So you can do both. There's no law against doing both. But they're different animals completely.
But lower limit, but a lot more flexibility is
how
you can use the money with the Coverdell.
Correct. And in either case, you cannot take a tax deduction at the federal level for either of those plans.
Again, 513-419-7100. Let's talk with Vicki in Montgomery. Hi, Vicki.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for this program. It's very timely.
Thank you.
Glad to hear it.
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
I have a question. So if I opened an account for my granddaughter, could other people put money in that particular account?
A great question.
Or if she got checks from birthday or Christmas, whatever, could that money be invested in that account?
Absolutely. That's a great question. It can become a family affair for saving for your student's education.
That's correct. Anyone who wants to can contribute to that, but that account can only have one owner, one person calling the shots, calling the tune as to how it's invested. But exactly, aunts, uncles, everyone can invest in that one account.
And they would just write a check directly to the account?
Directly to the plan.
Okay.
Correct.
What about the idea of using a Roth IRA to help pay for college education? Is that advisable?
Well, it's somewhat controversial, as we were discussing off the air. It can be done because with a Roth, the contributions can be lifted out of that tax-free. But once you do that, that money is no longer there for your retirement. So that's the real again, that it can be done, and some people do it.
A Roth is so valuable because it is genuinely tax-free when you take it out, as long as you wait until you're retired.
Yeah, the earnings are tax-free.
The earnings are tax-free, which is really unusual in our tax code. You just don't find tax-free in the tax code anywhere else other than a Roth. And I think our politicians may regret developing that. So we think that's a very valuable resource that should be one of the last ones you touch.
Yeah. So I think the consensus is that, yes, you can do it. And sometimes in the absence of anything else, you may have to do it. And even if you're not 59 and a half, again, you have to make a distinction between your contributions, which come out tax-free, and any growth. If you accidentally dip into that growth part of the Roth before you're 59 and a half, then you could trigger some penalties. So it's the kind of thing you'd want to talk with your financial advisor and your accountant before you actually, you know, push a button and make that happen.
Let's talk with Latoya in Warren County. Hi, Latoya.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I had a question. I'm a single mom, and I don't make much money. And I have a 14-year-old and a 10-year-old. And I want to save up for college, but it's impossible when I'm trying to pay bills and take care of the household.
That's a great question. That's a tough situation to be in. I think if it's a choice between paying your bills and saving for college, you choose your bills every time. Hopefully, your kids are going to do well in school and they're going to be eligible for some perhaps financial aid based on your single income status. And hopefully, they do really well in school and are eligible for some merit-based help, too.
Yeah. And Latoya, I would direct you at the very least to go to the library and download. If you have your own computer, go get your hands on a copy of Publication 970 by the IRS, because the very first thing Chapter 1 is scholarships, fellowships, grants, tuition reductions, Pell grants, the whole bit. It's all in there.
Let's talk with David in Claremont County. Hi, David.
Good afternoon. I'd like to pick up where Latoya left off. I'm a UC professor, and I hope we all agree that the quality of a nation depends upon the level of education of our citizens. If you look at European countries, especially, we had a guest lecturer from Germany who talked about higher education in Germany is free for qualified students. And what I see is that we are evolving to a system of education that makes higher education only available to the wealthy or near wealthy. And I personally am losing students from my classes who cannot afford to pay the tuition. So what I think we're ignoring the elephant in the room, and that is the support for higher education in the United States is dismal and is getting worse every year. And I hope that we will. I would like to hear you talk about the United States supporting higher education and making it essentially free for those qualified students. And I might point out that we had one presidential candidate that endorsed that, and Bernie Sanders pushed that. I would like to see questions placed to the current candidates about their support for free higher education for qualified students.
Yeah. Thank you, David.
Interesting points, and I know we're running out of time, but
The difficulty is what David points out. There's a lot of politics surrounding this. So while the idea is a good one, getting there is going to be the tough part.
And more importantly, this is not something that's new. Here in Cincinnati, 180 years ago, the Lane Seminary, where Harriet Beecher Stowe's father came here, it was a manual labor college. One of the students who graduated from the Lane Seminary, which used to be in Walnut Hills, founded a college based on manual labor, where students worked. They built the buildings. They dug the wells. It's called Berea College in Kentucky. That was John Fee, who went to school here in Cincinnati. So this is an argument that's been a long time going.
And Berea still provides a very fine education for usually no cost to its students. They work their way through.
We could do 2 hours on that one question.
We could. And again, it's not so much whether you agree with it or not. It's getting to that point.
It's a problem.
A real battle. Yeah. Well, Luke and Chris, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Very welcome, Mark.
Thank you.
Certified financial planner Luke Hale with Foster & Motley, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And listeners are reminded that the information provided on the show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation. Up next, the power of WordPress and a preview of the upcoming WordCamp. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.